Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Can we stop the greed heads from their destruction of banking and more? And of course, we're talking about the Silicon Valley Bank failure. President Biden came out and said, here's how it works and then what he said. How it works is the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, the FDIC, guarantees that if you put money in a bank that's FDIC insured, and the Silicon Valley Bank was, in fact, pretty much all banks in the United States are, that if you put money in a bank like that and the bank goes bust, the FDIC will give you up to $250,000, $250,000. So if your deposits in the bank are under $250,000, you're everything's copacetic. If your deposits in the bank are over $250,000, as many businesses were, and some individuals as well, obviously, but the big concern here, I think, was a lot of these Silicon Valley companies that were using the bank for payroll and things that had, a lot more than $250,000 in there, and they just wouldn't get anything, right, beyond the $250,000. What Biden did is he said, we're going to bend the rules here. We're going to have FDIC, which is funded, by the way, by a fee from the banks. We're going to have the FDIC pay everybody everything. We're going to suspend that $250,000 rule, which, should calm everything down and probably will, although there's two other banks, Signature Bank and First Republic Bank, both out of New York, that are having similar problems. So we'll see how this shakes out. But, the bottom line is President Biden said, not a penny of taxpayer money on the line here, which so far is true. The problem is FDIC is a sort of like Amtrak. It's a corporation, but it is government owned and run and administered. So if they run out of money bailing out this bank, it's going to be up to you and me to give the FDIC enough money to bail out a few other banks. So, we'll see where this goes. I'm frankly not particularly freaked out about this because these are the smaller banks. And the reason why is that it goes back to 1999. Starting in the 1930s, the week that Franklin Roosevelt was inaugurated as president, the first week of March of 1933, when he was sworn in, they later changed it to January, in part because of this. Every bank in America, or pretty much every bank in America, failed. Most of them had already failed. And if you had put your money in a bank, you lost every single penny of it. And, the reason why my grandmother never trusted banks, right? So what came out of that was a whole series of regulations and principally Glass-Steagall, The Glass-Steagall Law was passed, actually it was passed in late 1932. It was passed by the Hoover administration. It was tweaked and other things were added to it by FDR. But basically those rules kept banks solid and stable all the way through the Reagan administration. And then Reagan came along and said, you know, we hate regulations, we're Republicans. And so he said, let's try out, you know, instead of just deregulating all the banks, let's start with the savings and loans, because they're a fraction of the size of all the big banks. And so they deregulated the savings and loans in 1983. And sure enough, 5 years later, 1987, over 1,000 of them went bankrupt as their CEOs and members of their boards of directors walked off with multi-million dollar bonuses and all this kind of thing. So that didn't work out so well, so they re-regulated the SNLs. That was in the 80s. Then comes 1999, and Texas Republican Senator Phil Gramm comes out and says, this Glass-Steagall thing from 1932 has worked so well all these years, prevented any bank failures. Obviously, we don't need it anymore. And so they did away with it in 1999. And that, of course, caused the banks to start gambling with our checkbook savings, buying risky mortgages and tranches of mortgages. And you know the whole story, right? We all lived through it. And that led directly to the Bush crash of 2008, where the whole system froze up and you and I and the FDIC and the Fed poured literally trillions of dollars into the pockets of these big banks in New York, and the banksters themselves who took billion-dollar bonuses out of this trillion, multi-trillion-dollar, like a $12 trillion bailout, the banksters got rich on that. So in response to that 2008 disaster, in 2010, President Obama signed into law legislation that re-regulated the banks. It wasn't Glass-Steagall. It didn't go as far as separating commercial banks from investment banks, which is what Glass-Steagall had done, but it was a good step. So then comes Donald Trump in 2018 with the Republicans controlling Congress. And they said, you know, this is fine regulating the big banks, but these medium-sized banks, these banks that are, you know, have a quarter of $1 billion or less in assets, $250 million or less, we don't really need to regulate them. They're fine. They're not the ones that crashed the economy. That was the big banks. And so President Trump very proudly signed into law deregulation of these medium-sized and small banks like Silicon Valley Bank. In fact, Silicon Valley Bank's CEO had spread $500,000 around Congress, influencing legislators to pass that very legislation, that very deregulation that Donald Trump signed in 2018. And sure enough, 5 years later, that bank failed, along with two others so far, the Signature Bank and the First Republic Bank. Markets are not happy about this. We'll see how it shakes out. Like I said, I'm not particularly freaked out because these are the small and medium-sized banks. The big banks are still regulated. But hopefully, people will figure out the simple bottom line that greed is not good and that when you don't regulate greed, you end up with disasters. Now, this case is specific to banking. But there's a whole bunch of other ones. I mean, we've all seen this. It might be selling opioids that kill hundreds of thousands of Americans, or poisoning children's metabolisms with processed, plastic-packaged, forever chemical-laced foods that lead to cancer, obesity, and diabetes, or pushing cigarettes, or posing wind and solar farms. I mean, there's always somebody willing to sell, some politician willing to sell their soul for the right price, and there's always some billionaire out there who has enough money to pay that price. We've all seen this greed working in real time. My own father was killed knowingly by the asbestos industry because they were not regulated. My brother, who died last year, was killed by the tobacco industry because they were not regulated. And these industries knew exactly what they were doing. And if there's not a similar story in your life, then you're probably the outlier. So what do we do? This is what happens when the high-functioning sociopaths among us, these billionaires and CEOs, start buying off legislators because, you know, Citizens United, because the Supreme Court legalized it. This is why billionaires only pay 3% in income taxes. Donald Trump is the poster child for this. We must start regulating these industries. We must change this paradigm, this whole Reagan thing that You know, government is the problem. Government's not the solution. No, government can be the solution. And we need to do something about this. We need to be re-regulating these banks and a few other industries as well. This is not the only deregulation that Donald Trump and his buddies did. There were bunches of them. And you're going to see more consequences of it as well.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Have you seen the impacts of deregulation in your own life? Charles Sauer is on the line with us. He's a libertarian economist, president of the Market Institute, the author of the book Profit Motive, What Drives the Things We Do. He's the host of a new podcast, Pardon My Parsing, at buzzsprout.com. Marketinstitute.org is the website. Charles Sauer, S-A-U-E-R, is his Twitter handle. Charles, welcome back to the program. So libertarian policy pretty clearly and pretty explicitly says that we should not have regulatory agencies, that that's the job of the free market itself, that banks behave badly, people will stop patronizing them, end of story. What say you?
I hear your support. You're welcome to the party. I'll take that. No, I think that that's a good summary of where we're at. And I think that this is a good example of where having the government out might have been helpful in this case.
So if we have no regulation of banks and, you know, you've got some banksters who are running a big scam. I mean, you know, this happened in the United States from the founding of the Republic up until the 1930s. People put their money in the bank. Abraham Lincoln did this in 1857. He was paid $4,800 by the railroads for the work he did. He went to the bank and, cashed the check. Good thing he did, because 2 weeks later, the bank failed. And the banksters who owned the bank ran away with the money. How is the average person supposed to audit a bank?
Well, this isn't about one person. This is about markets. And altogether, it's how do we know that when we go to the store and buy a Snickers, it's going to be safe? It's because they're out there. They've continually put out good product. And so we know that a Snickers is going to be safe. It isn't that the FDA is necessarily making sure that we're safe. We know that they can't even ensure that baby formula is safe. But the market tells us that a Snicker when we go to the store is going to be safe. And the more that we have government involved in saying, don't worry, you can cross the road without looking, we've made it safe, the more problems we get into where people cross the road without looking, or in this case, deposit their checks without actually paying attention to what's in the bank. So with Silicon Valley Bank, we had a homogenous client base where everybody was in kind of the similar industry. And so when the similar industry went down, we had a bank that had problems. And if people instead were paying attention to what the market was doing and that they didn't think the government was there to help them, they would have paid attention to that. And the market would have said, that's not the way we want a bank run.
So there's kind of a fire hose of data there. You're suggesting that we shouldn't have big government traffic lights?
Yeah, well, no, it's not even big government traffic lights. We have big government saying, look, not only have we installed traffic lights, but we've also said that we're going to arrest people that run red lights. Therefore, you don't have to pay attention when you cross the street. Right. You don't have to look around. And in this case, these investors, these depositors needed to look around and understand that a homogenous base was not a good bank. But big media, big financial guys weren't doing that. They had closed their eyes because the government was saying, oh, no, everything's safe.
So I get it. You're arguing that we don't need bank regulation. We don't need the Food and Drug Administration. We should go back to the world that Upton Sinclair chronicled in his book, The Jungle, back in 1909, as I recall, about the meatpacking industry and our food supply. You know, I mean, that led to the pure food, that led to the creation, basically, of the USDA and the FDA. We should go back to those times. We should just trust big companies. We don't have to know what chemicals they're putting in our candy bars. They're good for us, right? I mean, we've got a massive epidemic of obesity and type 2 diabetes and heart disease in the United States over the last two generations. There's a lot of speculation that this is caused by chemicals that are being put in our food supply by these same companies. But hey, we should all become scientists and figure this out.
No, but Listen,
this makes absolutely no sense to me. Absolutely.
We think
no
it's
sense.
Okay because the FDA has said, look, all of these bad foods are okay for you. We, our stamp is on the back of these packages.
Well, you're thinking of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the USDA, not the FDA, but yeah.
Sorry. But if their stamp wasn't on the back of these products, maybe more people would pay attention. And if the leaders in the community said, hey, these are bad for you, then the other people would follow. If your doctor said, these are bad for you. But when the government comes over the top and says, look, no, they aren't. We've inspected it. We've done the research. We know best and it's good. Then people shut off their brains. But it isn't just the individual. You have doctors that you can listen to. You have leaders in the community. You could listen to your politician if you want to. What, 50% of the country says that they wouldn't
do that? I'm assuming you're agreeing with
Milton
Friedman that you don't even want doctors to be licensed and regulated. Because, hey, if somebody's a bad doctor, the word will spread and people will stop going to him, right? I mean, Milton Friedman wrote a whole chapter about that in his first and major book. I'm forgetting the title.
As it sits, we have doctors that are practicing well past their prime, but they still have licenses. So hospitals still have them hired. And so that still works for people. Look, when the government gets involved, we see Madoff, his investments were inspected several times by the government, which is what allowed him to continually keep getting money from these investors.
I think this is called the exceptions that prove the rule, Charles. I mean, if you're telling me that the idea that you and the libertarian members of the Republican Party are trying to sell to America is that we should do away with stoplights and traffic lights because it's big government intervention, and you just need to learn to, you know, look both ways, damn it, that we should do away with the U.S. Department of Agriculture and just trust that the big companies and the little companies, too, and the fly-by-night hustlers are going to be giving us good food because, hey, they'd get a bad reputation if somebody died, and then maybe they'd have to go out of business and start another company under a different name, right? If you're telling us that, I don't think anybody's going to buy it.
I'm just saying that regulations aren't a magic fairy tale that you can just wave a wand at and solve all of your problems.
Nobody's suggesting they are.
Well, yeah, no. If you look at what the left is saying with Silicon Valley Bank, they want to put the capital requirements back in Dodd-Frank because of the Silicon Valley Bank failure. Those capital requirements wouldn't have done anything in this case because the bank made a bad decision.
Well, it wasn't the capital requirements. It was the stress test requirement. The banks that are regulated under Dodd-Frank, and as you correctly point out, Silicon Valley Bank is no longer one of those, or at least, you know, is well under-regulated, were required every year or every 2 years, one or the other, to perform a stress test, to imagine the worst case scenarios in the economy and make sure that their bank would survive that. They got exempted from that, and that's why they were invested in long bonds and, you know, on the assumption that their interest rates were going to stay low forever, which was a stupid assumption.
Well, it even goes beyond that.
How is somebody who's got a checking account at this bank responsible for that?
What you have is a government has to come up with these stress tests. They're not going to figure out some of these stress tests themselves. They don't know exactly what to test. But when you have depositors as a market making the decision whether a bank has stress test themselves correctly, then they're more likely to make the right decision.
What
but
market?
When you have a magic government fairy tale
regulation, what is this magic market you're talking about?
What do you mean the magic market?
You said you said when they have the market, you know, essentially regulating the bank, everything will be wonderful. What is this magical market you're talking about?
That's each individual making their own decision. It's that invisible hand. As individuals make decisions,
I have to come up with enough equipment at home to be able to test all my food to make sure that the food that I'm getting isn't. You know, filled with bad chemicals. I need to get a microscope and all kinds of stuff. I have to start very carefully approaching every intersection because the streetlights and the stop signs are being taken down. And so, you know, we just always have to be looking around. I have to go into my bank and examine their books every month and make sure that they're not making stupid investments. Is this the world that you're telling us would be the optimal world for America?
Yes, I am, because that's even what I teach my kids. And I'll tell you what, it saved my life yesterday. I was going through an intersection and a car ran a red light. You know what I did? I don't trust the government. So I was actually looking for cars to run red lights. I was able to stop in time. The fact is we need people paying attention to what's going on. And the more government control you have, the more nanny state. the more that people stop paying attention to what they're doing, the higher you increase Social Security, the less people invest in retirement. There's different pieces where the government is involved. We pay less attention to what we're doing. We pay less attention to where our money's going.
Well, and I don't have the time, Charles.
You don't need that.
And I don't think the average person has the time to be investigating their doctor and their bank and their food suppliers.
Well, they should, and they should. Easy ways to do it, and now we have the internet to help us out. Therefore, technology.
Okay, Charles Sauer, the libertarian economist and president of the Market Institute, marketinstitute.org. His podcast is, pardon my parsing, at buzzsprout.com. Hang on just a second, Charles.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Thank you, Charles. Thanks for dropping by today.
Thank you.
Yeah, good talking to you. Pearson in Lamarck, Texas. Hey, Pearson, what's on your mind today? Thanks for watching Free Speech.
Yeah. Geez, talk about putting on steroids, buyer beware. Fair is fair. What's fair for me, for you, it's up in the air. If we did things his way, the Republican, and what's his party again, the Libertarian Party?
Yeah.
If we did the way things Libertarians and Republicans wanted, like you said, we would have to be on guard 24/7, which would drain so much energy out of us. Where would we find the energy and the innovation to operate in the free marketplace of ideas and products and services? According to him, it's okay for traffic lights if his friends own and operate them for profit, just like the railroads.
Well, he didn't say that. He didn't say that. But I suppose you could. One of the things that libertarians advocate, Rand Paul is in favor of this, for example, is turning our public roads over to private corporations and billionaires who can set up toll roads and charge us whatever they want to travel on them. Those billionaires then could presumably take control of the intersections, and they could manage the traffic lights, although you may have to pay a quarter every time you get to a traffic light.
You're saying exactly what I just said. Exactly.
I guess.
They want to privatize, Tom, they want to privatize everything that's not nailed down.
Yeah.
The vast majority of Americans agree with me. 60 to 75% of Americans agree with common sense policy. In other words, universal health care, expanded and improved Medicare for all citizens, reduced or zero tuition for college and vocational school. These are public goods. Common sense. Why do we want to listen to anything he has to say?
Well, because he represents a large faction of the Republican Party and a large faction of the listening public. I mean, the libertarianism is the hot thing on right-wing talk radio, on Fox News, on across YouTube, all these. And you've got a bunch of libertarian billionaires. One of them writes a column every week for The Washington Post, who are constantly pushing this kind of stuff. We have to take this seriously.
As far as I'm concerned, and I'll let you go after this, as far as I'm concerned, libertarians are just another flavor of Republicans. I want to see a flavor of liberals out there who are equally vocal. That's what I'd like to see.
Yeah, well, I've been saying for years that libertarians are Republicans who want to smoke dope and get laid.
But there you go.
Because they want to decriminalize prostitution and all drugs. Those are topics, frankly, that I think we should all have a serious conversation about. Doing away with traffic lights, doing away with agencies that license physicians. This is another, you know, Rand Paul created his own licensing board to regulate himself as an ophthalmologist, which is nuts.
That's right. They want to create their own opportunities for profit. That's all it comes down to. Opportunities, they create opportunities for profit. That's all it comes down to.
Well, that's that magical market. That's that magical.
Deregulate everything.
Yeah,
God help us all.
Yeah, well, you know, it would be taking us back to the world basically before 1910, I would say, you know, before even the Taft administration. Go ahead.
Sorry, 1850, that would be more like it, because then they could own libs and black people.
I'm sure they want to deregulate child labor laws. Pearson, thank you for the call. Yeah. Well, yeah, in fact, what's her name down in Mike Huckabee's daughter, Sarah Sanders Huckabee, or Huckabee Sanders, just signed a law essentially legalizing child labor. So there you go, in Arkansas.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs,
a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
This whole shtick that Charles, and I don't mean that to minimize Charles and his position. This is a very real position within the Republican Party. You've got people like Mike Lee and Rand Paul who are proud libertarians. There's a whole bunch of them within the Republican caucus at the federal level, at the state levels. You've got libertarian billionaires. One of them writes an op-ed every week for the Washington Post, and some of them are funding some of the largest think tanks in the country. You've got an entire libertarian think tank, the Cato Institute, that was originally called the Charles Koch Foundation. I mean, this is not a completely fringe thing. And it really began being brought to us in 2024 by Ronald Reagan, by the Reagan administration, or the Reagan Revolution. Louise and I, we spent last week with our family down in Mexico. And as we were driving back to the airport, we passed through this massive slum, you know, a barrio bajo. Some of the houses were made out of scavenged cinder block and brick, but most of them were, you know, scavenged wood and tarps and stuff like that. Ditches with raw sewage for streets, electricity hijacked from streetlights. I've seen this in countries all over the world. I did international relief work for years in the 1980s, and I've, you know, lived and worked in these kinds of places. And when I got home and I was thinking back, well, actually, as we were driving through this slum, in Brazil they call them favelas, as we were driving through it, it suddenly struck me that in our climate, you couldn't just build a house out of scavenged cardboard and scavenged wood. You'd have to have something a little more waterproof, like a tent. And then it suddenly hit me, oh my God, we've got tent cities right here in Portland. We've got tent cities all over America where people are living without running water, without access to sewage, without electricity. They're just like these slums in these third world countries. America, as the result of 42 years of the Reagan Revolution, embracing this kind of libertarian ideology that big government is a bad thing. Well, here we are. Reagan told us over and over and over again what he was going to do. He promised America that if we could just go along with his war on organized labor, that companies would no longer be burdened by having to work things out with union bosses. This new right to work for less was going to save our, going to make us all richer. Well, instead, as we cut union membership from a third of us down to 6% of us, it's wiped out the average household. Reagan promised us if we stopped enforcing antitrust laws like he did in 1983, the big companies would give us better prices and everything would be wonderful. Instead, they wiped out small and medium-sized companies and turned our small towns and our inner cities into ghost towns. Reagan promised us that if we just cut the tax burden on the richest Americans, on the morbidly rich, the benefits would trickle down to the rest of us. Right. It didn't happen quite that way. He told us that we needed to get rid of oppressive regulations. Instead, our food supply is now filled with chemicals and microplastics and heavily processed phony foods. It goes on and on. I mean, you know, this is the world we want? Really?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Charles is not an outlier. He's representing the worldview of a lot of Republicans. On the line with us is Morris Pearl, the chair of the Patriotic Millionaires, formerly a managing director on the BlackRock team that the Federal Reserve, Treasury, and FDIC hired to structure and assess the cost of the Citibank bailout back in 2008. PatrioticMillionaires.org is the website. Morris_Pearl or Patriotic Millionaires are the Twitter handles. Morris, welcome back. It's been a while since we spoke. I was just debating regulation, specifically and broadly bank regulation, with a libertarian fellow who likes to come on the program and debate with me, Charles Sauer. But it seems like as much as bank regulation is a crisis, and certainly you've been writing and talking about this, the regulation of money in politics is the real issue here, is it not? Because is that not how we ended up without bank regulation?
I think, sadly, Tom, that is true. It's because the few people who can show up at donor events with lots of money get the ear of the politicians. And, oh, it's so inconvenient that we're trying to provide money for job creators and make an enormous profit for ourselves. And, you know, these regulators are getting in our way. And eventually, that's all they hear, because the people who are depositing their money at the bank are not the ones who show up at major donor events for politicians. They just want to have a checking account that's reliable. The libertarians should get rid of bank regulation the same way we should get rid of regulations on, you know, the safety of the ice cream in grocery stores. Everybody can judge for themselves whether the cows are safe that makes the milk that makes the ice cream. Why do we need a government for that? But, you know, I don't think that's practical, and I also don't think getting rid of bank regulation is practical.
Right, and back in the day, in fact, you know, we used to have ice cream that was contaminated with tuberculosis or heavy metals or whatever. You know, is spot on. So you participated in the oversight of Citibank back in 2008. What lessons from that 2008 experience do you think we should be applying now to this current experience?
The lesson is that bank managers have every incentive to go right up to the line, because from their point of view, they want to take as much risk as possible, because usually they win out. Most of the time it works, and they make huge amounts of profit for their bank and bonuses for themselves. And the few times it doesn't work out, well, they may have to look for a new job, but that's the FDIC's problem to take all the losses. So it's a huge asymmetrical thing. Tails I win, heads somebody else loses, you know?
Right. So here we've got the Biden administration coming out and saying, we're going to bail out everybody who had more than $250,000 in this bank, while FDIC's rules specify only those people who had deposits of under $250,000 were protected. I could see an argument for raising that, you know, in this day and age to maybe $500,000 or $1 million, but that almost seems like a completely separate argument. Are we not now, by bending the rules essentially and saying, no, we're going to protect everybody, essentially throwing out the rules? I mean, isn't every bankster in America going, oh, really? Oh, I guess I can do a whole lot of damage.
No, they're not protecting the banksters. The actual people that worked in the bank are now unemployed, and the actual investors in the bank get nothing. So the people who own the bank and the people who ran the bank are not getting anything from the government. I mean, the depositors aren't either. What they're protecting is the people who have the money in the bank. The people whose payroll checks are due on the 15th tomorrow morning will have good checks.
No, I completely get that.
The payroll processing company.
But what I'm saying is, a week before this went down, the CEO of the bank pulled a little over $3 million out and stuck it in his pocket. It's probably a tip of the iceberg. He probably will never have to work again for the rest of his life, and that's probably true of many of the people who are directors of this bank. I completely agree with Joe Biden going around the FDIC rules and saying, we're going to make everybody, all the depositors, whole. I don't think he has a choice. I mean, you'd be looking at a major run on small and medium-sized banks around the country. And in fact,
every small and medium-sized bank.
Yeah, exactly. Doesn't that, though, argue that the FDIC's $250,000 limit has now been breached and is meaningless, and that we need to revisit that legislation?
Oh, yes. Yes, yes. I agree with that.
So,
I mean, I think the $250,000 limit is kind of ridiculous to begin with, because the people with money in checking accounts are typically people with payroll processors, like ADP, when you get your direct deposit every month.
Right.
You know, your employer sends a huge amount of money to ADP, and they send it to your direct deposits. And you probably don't even know what bank ADP uses, so having you responsible for that is kind of absurd.
So
that's the kind of
thing.
So
how do we balance this? How do we balance this risk? On the one hand, saying to the banks, you know, we're not going to protect you under all circumstances. We're not even going to protect your depositors. We want everybody to have some wariness in the marketplace here. And I know wealthy individuals who have money in multiple banks, you know, and I'm not talking wealthy at your level or, you know, the patriotic millionaires level. I'm talking people who have a couple hundred thousand, you know, $400,000 or $500,000 in their retirement fund in their 60s, you know, and they've got it in a couple of banks to not exceed that $250,000 FDIC limit. How do we balance this, the need for safety, with the need to have enough risk that there is some caution?
Hey, the guy with the couple hundred thousand for his retirement probably has it in mutual funds or government bonds or something, not in an actual checking account.
Right.
That's probably not what he's doing. And two, yeah, we need to protect people with checking accounts. And that's why we need regulations on banks. Banks that have money from checking accounts have to be regulated so that money is invested in only low risk things. And they have to manage their assets and liabilities. These are lessons that we should have learned in the 1980s. Many of us did learn in the 1980s,
right,
that you can't have deposits that can be withdrawn in one day's notice and invest in 30-year mortgages. That's ridiculous. And that's what this bank was doing.
So the stress test would, you know, if this bank, I mean, basically, when Donald Trump signed that legislation in 2018 to exempt Silicon Valley Bank and another 20 or so banks from the Dodd-Frank regulations, my understanding is the main thing that it exempted them from was the whole stress test process, which would have revealed the stupidity of investing the majority of your assets in long-term treasury bonds, which is what this bank did.
It wasn't even long-term treasury bonds. They call them treasury bonds, but they were actually mortgages. If you look at their statements, which the CEO signed in February, so he clearly knew about this before February.
Right.
And that's when he filed his 12b-1 plan to sell the stock, by the way. So it seems clear that he knew about this. If you look on their statement they filed in February with their end of year 10K, it clearly tells you that they've invested most of this money, tens of billions of dollars, in mortgage-backed securities. And yeah, they're guaranteed by Freddie and Fannie. You don't have to worry about them making the payments. But when rates went up, people make their payments more slowly. They don't tend to refinance. They don't tend to move. And the price of these mortgages just went down precipitously. And that's exactly the bank manager's job, is to think about those things ahead of time, like a year in advance, and know that might happen and not do that because of that risk.
Right. So basically reversing Trump's deregulation of the banks would have, in all probability, prevented this. Do we also need to reinstate Glass-Steagall and separate investment banks from commercial banks?
Well, I think that'd be a good idea, but I don't think that had much to do with this case.
Right.
These guys' problem was not investment banking. These guys' problem were that they were investing deposits in 30-year mortgages,
right,
which, I mean, anyone who's taken asset liability management 101 should know that's not what you do if you're running a bank, or that's not what you should be allowed to do anyway.
They were just
making a huge risk, thinking they might make a lot of money, and the FDIC will take the risk if they lose, so who cares?
Which raises the question. I understand that one of the larger depositors in this bank pulled all of his money out, or most of his money out, and suggested to his colleagues, who were also large investors, that they should pull their money out. Apparently did not believe that would cause a crisis for the bank.
Or maybe knew it would cause a crisis and didn't care.
Or, maybe was shorting the bank. I mean, God only knows. But is there oversight on that sort of thing? I mean, should we be protected from large depositors?
Well, people can deposit a lot of money in the bank. Maybe they shouldn't, but some people do have legitimate reasons for keeping large amounts of money in the bank.
Right.
And the whole idea of a bank account is you can take it out whenever you want. If it's not, then it's not really a bank account. I don't think we can say that people aren't allowed to make large amounts of deposits and withdrawals. I think we have to say that bank management has to be prudent enough to invest their money in such a way that they're okay if that does happen.
Right.
The bank manager should have known that that's one thing that might happen, is these depositors withdrawing their money.
Yeah, I totally get it.
They're supposed to think about all these different possible scenarios.
There you go. Morris Pearl, chair of the Patriotic Millionaires, who I mentioned in my op-ed today over at HartmanReport.com, by the way. Morris, thanks so much for dropping by. It's great talking with you again. Thank you.
Great to be in your show, Tom. Thank you. Yeah, bye-bye.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Is it time to just end all regulation and go back to the era before traffic lights? Chris in San Diego. Hey, Chris, what's on your mind today?
What they're arguing is a historically, empirically proven wrong theory. We have the data. Every single time we have deregulated, it has led to disastrous conditions. Every time. The proof is there. We don't need to argue the future. We can just look at the past. It's there.
Yeah. Well, the argument that libertarians make in response to that, and I've been debating these people for 20 years on this program and probably 40 years of my life, the argument that they make is that that's because we have not yet achieved a society that is truly libertarian or objectivist. The objectivists, the Ayn Rand people
same
make
the
same argument.
Same one the communists made, right?
Say that again?
Same one the communists make. The same one the communists make.
Right.
We haven't truly tried communism.
Right, exactly. And we haven't truly tried libertarianism because right now what we've got is this hybrid system where there's some regulation and it kind of messes things up enough that then you say you need more, you know, quack. My question to them, and I didn't hit Charles with it this time because I do it about every three times he's on the air. And Charles, by the way, is a genuinely decent human being. I mean, I disagree with his political philosophy and his economics, but I've known Charles for years, and he's a good friend, and he's a good father, and he's a decent human being. But the question I always ask is, please name one country, state, city, anything, any, you know, human collection of, you know, more than a couple thousand people that has successfully run along libertarian lines in the history of the world. There is none.
Exactly. Just like with when they asked the guy from Dell, you know, show me one country. We can show you that. It was America. But they don't follow up. One more quick comment, Tom. Listening to your program is a lot like watching Jeopardy. I think I'm smart and informed until I do so. It's great. It's wonderful. But it's like, oh, man, I really don't know anything. Hey,
well, thank you,
Tom, for taking the call.
Okay, thanks a lot. Good talking to you, Chris. Robert in Modesto, California. Hey, Robert, what's on your mind today?
That was a great place to follow up because I kind of feel the same way. I've been struggling with trying to encapsulate what libertarian, I think I finally got it down. It's basically it's advocating for anarchy with privileges, if I'm getting this
right. That would
right,
be a nice summary. I mean, you know, their basic shtick is that the only role of government should be to run the army, the courts, and the jails.
And basically, it could theoretically work if everybody was Mr. Rogers in their ethics and their moralities, right, and we brought everybody back to zero economically, you know, so there were no millionaires. And then, because basically all it would do is open the door for warlords and fiefdoms, so, you know, and things like that, because whoever, back to the golden rule, you know, the golden rule and the iron rule, you know, you know, if you've got the iron or the lead rule, you know, if you've got the iron, the lead, or the gold, you make the rules.
Right, exactly.
So it would basically just impoverish all of us.
Yeah, no, and that's the consequence of it. And libertarianism does lead to feudalism. I mean, you know, that's warlordism, because basically what happens is that the most powerful, whether it's by virtue of violent force or financial force, the most powerful end up controlling everything. And that's, you know, in my opinion, what libertarians want. Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. With higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR, all into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required. It's accessible from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Hartman with two N's. netsuite.com/Hartman. That's netsuite.com/Hartman.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Russ in Upland, California. Hey, Russ, what's on your mind today?
I was in the banking business and worked for large outfits, Countrywide Home Loans, if you remember that.
Mm-hmm.
I think you probably heard of Bank of America.
Yeah.
get rid of FDIC and deregulate these people? You know, the stuff I saw done would curl your hair. And the top people in the company did this stuff without batting an eye.
Thinking that they wouldn't get caught, you mean?
I think due to hubris, I actually believe that they thought they would never get caught. But the problem was, you know, the whole subprime mortgage scheme is where you make people a loan and you qualify them at 0% interest. Okay?
Right.
And their house payment's going to be, I'm just picking numbers real quick, $1,800 in 3 years or 5 years, it depended. That would go to, it would be, the loan would be rewritten at the current rate,
right,
mortgage rate at the time that that's done.
Right, which means in today's world, they would have gone up about 3 points.
Yeah, and there, it didn't even have to go up because the interest rates were higher. This was in the early 2000s.
Right.
They were higher anyway, 6-7%. Your payment would literally quadruple or thereabouts, sometimes even more, sometimes a little less. Okay, here is the line they gave you. Nobody ever wrote this down, but this is the way they were all sold. They were told by the lenders that that's okay. You can refinance your loan. Well, no, you can't because you wouldn't qualify in a million years.
Right.
For a payment now that's not $1,800 a month, it's $6,200 a month.
Right. And if I'm recalling correctly, Russ, most of this bad behavior was being driven by the fact that the people, the salespeople on the ground, the first point of contact between the borrower and the bank, those people were actually commissioned salespeople. Their concern was not the future of the bank or the future of the borrower, for that matter. Their concern was making, you know, $1,000 commission for a 25-minute conversation in their office or on the phone with somebody who wanted to borrow money.
Exactly. And the second big lie that they told was, well, don't worry, you can sell your house.
Right.
Well, I was a real estate appraiser, okay, doing a lot of appraisals, almost all for lenders, you know, mortgage loans.
Right.
And when researching sales data and looking at how much money people put down and, you know, the percentage of the sales price was a mortgage, and most of these homes, I've got 75%, were being sold on and financed 100%. They'd take out a loan for 80%, the first trustee to be 80%, but there'd be a second trustee for the other percent.
Wow.
Doomed to fail. They knew the date these things were going to go bad.
Yeah, but by that time, they would have run off with their money to Mexico or something. Bob in Denver. Hey, Bob, what's on your mind today?
Donald J. Trump spoke the absolute truth when he said, I love the poorly educated.
Yes, of course.
A libertarian is a guy walking down the street with an umbrella and it's raining cats and dogs. He says, you know, I got a lot more sunshine without this damned umbrella, so he throws it away.
Right. Sort of.
There's such a term as a neo-libertarian?
I don't know. The Libertarian Party was invented in 1954, as I recall, might have been 56, in the 50s, by a group called the Foundation for Economic Education, FEE. And FEE was a front group for the real estate industry. And they had hired a guy, an obscure economist at that time. He was teaching at the University of Chicago by the name of Milton Friedman. They hired him and paid him a whole pile of money to write a pamphlet about the dangers of rent control. And the rent control was becoming a really big thing in New York. This was in the early 50s. We had pretty substantial inflation as a result of the end of World War II and all these people coming back into the job market and you know, the American economy just roaring into life. And there was this inflation. And so, you know, a lot of cities around the country, New York was the most famous for it, were putting rent control laws into place. And so the FEE wanted to have a political rationalization for opposing rent control. And that was the Libertarian Party. They invented the Libertarian Party out of whole cloth specifically to make this argument. And Friedman wrote this brochure, and they printed 500,000 copies of it, and sent them out to real estate brokers and agents and banks all around the country to pass out to their customers and things. And that's where it all started, Bob. And I think they're still there. Yeah, they're still. If Morris Pearl is right, and I believe he is, you know, the big sin of this bank wasn't that they were invested in treasuries, as I had read earlier, was that they were invested in mortgages. That's what took down the banks in 2008.
That's real powerful stuff, how you control financing and mortgages and redlining and all that stuff. And the Trump family back in the day, I heard somewhere that his grandfather ran a whorehouse or something when he first
Trump's
came
did.
To America.
Donald Trump's grandfather, out in the Pacific Northwest, in this neck of the woods. I think he was in Alaska, perhaps, but he was out here someplace. That's right, he ran a whorehouse and made his first fortune.
They pushed school vouchers, that's segregation.
Yep.
They push health insurance, which is rationing for profit.
Yeah. Oh, I got some.
I know this because I've had health issues. I've been uninsurable since I was a teenager.
And we've got
I'm an old, tired cripple now, and so I watch this stuff. It's scary. I got thousands of dollars a month in drug benefits, and I'll tell you, life gets real hard. One time in my life, I actually considered checking out, said, hell with this.
Oh, man.
I can't take the pain anymore.
Oh, man.
I lost a nephew here 2 weeks ago. It's a damn shame. But you know what? The people that are dying like that, they're not around to tell you the story anymore.
That's right. That's right.
That's the story with the COVID.
It's
the
absolutely right.
Died.
Bill in Clifton, New Jersey. Hey, Bill, what's up?
I'm surprised you didn't hit Mr. Sauer with your best analogy, which is the football one without rules. Because, you know, this country's so big on football.
Right.
And the entire game is based on rules. Otherwise, they would kill each other. I don't know if you ever saw the movie Weatherheads with Renee Zellweger and George Clooney.
I don't
It's
recall.
Sort of a rom-com. But it's great. You should watch it. It's really good, well done. It's about football before there were rules in the 1920s and 30s, where people were regularly killed on the football field. And
seriously?
They had all kinds of... They had all kinds of crazy plays, like a pig in a poke, where they would hide the football under their jersey and run with it, or they would sew half of a football to their jersey, so someone would be a decoy running with the football. They did what was called a crusty bob, where they would take a load of mud and throw it down the pants of the person in front of them so they would slow them down. It's about all that. And then when they finally organized and had rules and said, we can't do this anymore, and everyone was sort of disappointed, but at the same time, they were dealing with the change. It's a perfect example of regulations. I think you have to also bring home the fact that the founding fathers hated corporations, and there weren't any private corporations for about 10 or 15 years. And then they had to be checked out by the government, and their charters had to be scrutinized and everything.
Yeah, and their hatred was largely informed by the East India Company and their experience with it.
Right, right. But my father was one of the last surviving members of Hamilton Society for the Establishment of Useful Manufacturers in Paterson, New Jersey.
Oh,
the Great Falls, where the silk mills were and the labor and everything.
Uh-huh.
And you should look into that, too. The Great Falls, the second largest waterfalls east of the Rockies, is in Paterson, New Jersey, where I was born.
Bill, thank you. I will. Thank you very much for that. Todd in Columbus, Ohio, watching us on Free Speech TV. Hey, Todd, what's on your mind today?
We need a memorable way to refute libertarians, and I think that I have a memorable way to do so.
Okay.
It's what can be called the two-bird problem, and it's specific to the food industry. And you have to realize that one way the libertarians defeat discourse that defeats them is they generalize regulation. They don't tell you that in different industries, regulations mean different things, and the function of government differs.
Right.
So this two-bird problem only applies to food. It wouldn't apply to banking. So on the front end, you have the canaries in the coal mine problem. And what that means is you're relying on a number of people to get sick or die from a foodborne illness, and the market takes notice only when a critical mass is achieved. Because
right.
Government is not there to be the clearinghouse of disease. It's not there to investigate and follow vectors back to the source. So you wait until a number of people die, then somebody says, oh, it's this business.
Right. This is the libertarian sales pitch, is that everything is actually, to the extent that anything is regulated, it's regulated through the courts, that after your breadwinner and your family dies from working in the factory because of unsafe conditions, you can then sue that factory. That will cause the factory owner to behave better in the future.
Actually, that's the next step. Once this happens 4, 5, or 6 times, mm-hmm. you've already killed, say that salmonella and sent out to the public through chicken right. from a plant. Well, first of all, that corporation is going to do everything it can to change the narrative.
Yeah.
They're going to get their PR team on it, and they're going to confuse the public. So you're going to have a misinformation war every time a corporation is accused of killing somebody in the public.
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing that right now with the fossil fuel industry claiming that there's no such thing as global warming, or if there is, oh, it's a natural process, or it's caused by the sun.
Right, but that cannot be as immediately checked as you can in food industry. So the government, there's a clearinghouse for these reports of illness. Mm. They then put the CDC on the job, who does a vector analysis to determine who actually should be, who looks like the actual cause of this illness. Mm-hmm. Then they would send somebody in to inspect the plant, to do testing, and confirm this. You can't confirm global warming and who's at cause of it, because everybody's at cause of it.
Yeah.
But you can pinpoint this. So what they're doing is, if you don't have the government doing that, then you're relying on a number of people to die before the market takes notice. So that people are the canaries in the coal mine.
Yeah.
That's only the front side. On the back side, you have the Chicken Little problem. So after like 4, 5, or 6 of these happen, then you have people who are immersed in conspiracies anyway, and the Chicken Little problem is a causal attribution problem. So the people get sick, and they think, oh, it's the last thing they ate. But it could be something they ate 2 or 3 days ago.
Right.
They go on social media.
Or it could be that, you know, a witch cast a hex on them. I mean, you know, it's...
Well, right, but I'm saying they at least try to say it wasn't... It was real.
Yeah, I mean, that's less wacky than some of the stuff about COVID, for example.
Right, but they attributed it to the wrong person.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I totally get it. Fascinating. Todd, thank you. Two birds, indeed.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Steve in Gresham, Oregon. Hey, Steve, what's on your mind today?
So your libertarian friend mm-hmm. reminded me of conversations I've had with libertarians long time and conservatives recently. And we know that conservatives are on the eternal search for a moral justification for selfishness.
Yes, that's where that comes from. John Maynard Keynes's quote, is it not?
I forget, but...
I think so.
So your libertarian brought up the idea that he's saving for his own retirement, you know, and he doesn't need Social Security. And the argument is that your FICA tax is roughly 7.5%, and your employer pays 7.5%. That's 15% that your employer could be giving to you, and you could be saving that on for your own retirement. And I can do better with that money than Social Security can. And then you bring up, well, what about 2009? There's a lot of people thought they were going to retire then.
Okay. Well, also, if you think that because your employer suddenly has 15% more money, they're going to give it to you, I've got a bridge to sell you in Brooklyn.
Exactly, because your average worker, they're worried about having enough money every week to feed their family and enough money at the beginning of the month to pay their rent.
Yep.
And that's what people care about. If you give them, they're not going to see that other 15%. Their employer is going to make sure that their paycheck is just enough to feed their family and to pay their rent, and your employer is going to keep that other 15%.
I agree.
That's just the math, and people don't realize it.
Very well said, and this is the challenge of our times, is how to deal with it, how to get around this. Steve, thank you very much for the call. Paul in Woodinville, Washington. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Well, Tom, I think when you have certain guests on, you need to have a disclaimer that this is libertarian entertainment, not to be taken as serious commentary. Otherwise, see, you're the same as Fox News and their Sidney Powell and her friend with the...
Except that it is serious commentary, Paul. I mean, the positions that Charles were taking are literally the positions that Mike Lee or Rand Paul would argue right now.
And I'd laugh them out the door. Listen, here's the thing. They don't really understand regulation. So I wanted to add to the entertainment and say, how about we consider some physiological deregulations, like in your body, right? And which is, by the way, physiological deregulation we call disease.
Or death.
And we have a number of them. For instance, if you'd like some deregulated cell replication, we have a large variety of cancers to choose from. Mesothelioma, we have all kinds of, lung cancer, blood cancer, breast cancer, any kind of cancer you want. Of course, you might prefer some cardiac deregulation, and we have the popular myocardial infarct, otherwise known as a heart attack, for those who also cannot regulate their diet and exercise. This is absurd.
Yeah.
So let me just say that there are two kinds of regulations, basically, and you learn this in physiology. One is called negative feedback loop regulation, and that's essentially what your furnace and air conditioner does. You have to keep the system within narrow functional limits. That's what your body does.
Right.
For instance, if your temperature in your house goes too far below the thermostat, well, the furnace comes on. If it goes too far above, then right. The air conditioner
kicks on. If your stomach is full, you stop eating. Yeah.
Right. But, there's another one. So then that brings me to the other regulation, which is positive feedback regulation. Now, negative feedback is a continuance. So, yeah, if your stomach gets too full, you stop eating. Now, here's the positive feedback. Positive feedback regulation always culminates in some event. And in physiology, it's a body cavity clearing event. So if you don't stop eating when your stomach is full, what will happen? You will culminate in an event called vomiting. Also happens with relieving yourself. And you can only, it builds up, the urge builds and builds and builds, and then you got to let it go. There's also sexual gratification in men, ends up in a body cavity clearing event. And that also results in the grandma of them all for the woman, which is a major body cavity clearing event known as childbirth. And you can't stop that. So this is the kind of regulations they want. They want something to build and then a crash, and that's economic.
Right, right.
That's what they do.
Fascinating analogy or metaphor or both. Paul, thank you. Thank you very much. That's great.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Mark in Valley, Washington. Hey, Mark, what's up?
According to your guest, Mr. Sauer, I am supposed to trust the people you just mentioned, along with the people that brought us Three Mile Island, Love Canal, glyphosate, asbestos, trans fats, global warming, and plastic in my bloodstream.
Yeah. Yeah, you're supposed to know all those things, Mark. Don't you have a mass spectrometer at home so you can analyze your blood for poisons and your food?
Yeah. These are the people I'm supposed to trust.
I totally get what you're saying, and the hypocrisy is thick. It absolutely is. Mark, thank you. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.